This is Greg Corumbus of Radio America reporting for WorldNet Daily. My guest this time is John Gizzi, political editor at Human Events, the National Conservative Weekly. And John, it's always great to have you with us.
It's always great to be here. Thank you for having me.
Well, it's been a very eventful primary season, and we saw that again this past Tuesday. We saw a runoff for the Georgia governor's race on the Republican side. We also saw critical primaries in Colorado and Connecticut and Minnesota. We'll get to each of them briefly. I know, John, the story you just wrote for today's brand-new edition of Human Events has to do with the Nathan Deal narrow victory for the GOP governor's nomination in Georgia. Your contention, John, despite the fact that the basically queen of the Tea Party movement, Sarah Palin, endorsed the other candidate, Karen Handel, that Nathan Deal is the real conservative. Why?
Yes, and that comes from talking to people who are active locally in Peach State politics and are the proverbial grassroots of the conservative movement. They said, and one in particular, Carolyn Meadows, former Republican National Committee woman, told me that while Karen Handel is a decent person, she was also someone who took the three exceptions on abortion, rape, incest, and the life of the mother, while Deal only took one, the life of the mother. He was endorsed by Georgia Right to Life, by Phyllis Schlafly, and by Mike Huckabee. But it wasn't only abortion. She had had a convivial relationship with the log cabin Republicans when she was head of the local government in Atlanta, Fulton County, and had been tied to the more moderate GOP establishment. Many who had been activists and were disappointed in outgoing Governor Sonny Perdue feared that she was so close she would be a third term of Perdue and would turn a cold shoulder to the conservative movement. I might add that Newt Gingrich and the American Conservative Union's Political Action Committee were also in the Deal corner. Handel, again, is a good person who had a very good record on fiscal issues and wanted to cut 10% of the state's budget if she were elected. That's commendable. At the same time, when it comes to primaries and low turnout, having the conservative bona fides, the conservative credentials, is what counts. And apparently it was enough to put Nathan Deal over the top by 0.4% of the vote.
Let's move on now to your home state of Connecticut. Dick Blumenthal was the Democratic nominee. We already knew that. Interesting race, but in the end, on the Republican side, Linda McMahon, the wrestling executive, of course, many different puns made about that fact in the campaign. She defeats former Congressman Rob Simmons, who has a very distinguished career in service to the country, as well as a Wall Street banker in Peter Schiff. Why did Linda McMahon win, and will she challenge Dick Blumenthal in any meaningful way?
Oh, she will challenge him. When someone spends $22 million of one's own money, a record for any Senate race so far this year in the country, that's impressive. I have to say, though, that historically Connecticut has never elected people who use their own money to attain higher office. There's just something, well, New Englandish about not voting for people who are perceived as having more resources than me or thee. We just don't do it in Connecticut. On the other hand, I've seen a lot of changes over the years in my home state. Electing women from both parties as governor, a governor removed from office on corruption charges, so things change. I have to say, let's revisit this in September. For now, Dick Blumenthal's the favorite.
All right, John, let's move on now to the state of Colorado, where there were very important primaries there as well on the Senate side. Senator Bennett, Michael Bennett, with the support of President Obama, able to hold off a pretty stiff challenge from Speaker of the House in Colorado, Andrew Romanoff, who was backed by former President Clinton. Does this suggest now that Michael Bennett is the man to beat, or will Tea Party favorite Ken Buck be the man standing at the end of the day?
Buck will win in the end because Colorado is shifting. The pendulum is going in the other direction after two election cycles where Democrats were in the driver's seat. I might add that this is going to be the classic ideological shootout, one that national correspondents, hopefully including me, will go to. And it will have a clear choice between an Obama Democrat, Michael Bennett, and a conservative Republican who is popular with the grassroots, Ken Buck. It's a race I look forward to covering.
In Minnesota, John, Tom Emmer is, of course, the Republican nominee for governor there. Mark Dayton, who used to be a one-term senator from Minnesota, narrowly winning the Democratic nomination. He didn't even run for re-election to the Senate because his numbers were so far in the tank. Is he now making a resurgence that'll land him in the governor's office, or will the Republicans hold on there?
Well, I never write anyone off politically, as you well know, Greg. Mark Dayton was someone who had all kinds of personal wealth, and it got him to the state auditor's position. It got him to the United States Senate, and then he gave up after one term, and he's been fairly obscure since then, and new faces such as Al Franken have come up. It's interesting to note that Mr. Emmer, the Republican, is a conservative on cultural and economic issues. I always liked Tim Pawlenty as a conservative, but I was told he was never solid. No one says that about Tom Emmer, and this, again, will be a classic case. Minnesota is a state that used to be solidly Democratic and produced nationally known Democrats from Hubert Humphrey to Paul Wellstone, but things are changing. Governor Pawlenty won as a Republican. I think Emmer will win as a Republican as well.
And, of course, as you mentioned, John, we will revisit these races since we still have more than 80 days until the midterms. We'll go through all of that in the weeks leading up to November 2nd. John, also in our last couple minutes here, we want to get your thoughts on the passing of two really legends on Capitol Hill. Some may say for good reasons, others may say for not so good reasons. Ted Stevens, of course, dying in a plane crash Monday night in Alaska, 40 years in the U.S. Senate before losing his 2008 re-election bid. Also, Dan Rostenkowski, who we'll get to in a moment. But first of all, your thoughts on the passing of Senator Stevens.
Ted Stevens was someone that I always cited as example why you should never write anyone off or dismiss anyone. A decorated veteran of World War II, one of General Claire Chennault's Flying Tigers, he went to Alaska to practice law, got involved in Republican politics, lost two bids for the U.S. Senate, including a primary, and then was rescued when a Democratic senator died and he was appointed to the seat. He never left until unusual and very sad circumstances, namely his indictment and conviction on corruption charges in the D.C. court, led to his very narrow defeat in the fall of 08. Sadly, he achieved vindication when the verdict was overturned because the prosecutors, a judge said, mishandled the case. But by then he lost. People who knew him said Ted Stevens showed no malice and at 86 was still going strong, doing what he always did, which was fishing and living life to the fullest. He will be missed. And again, people remember him as a pork barreler. I remember him as the man who never gave up. I like that.
Another big leader when it came to appropriations, of course, Dan Rostenkowski, leader of the House Ways and Means Committee for many years. His career, of course, also ended in an unfortunate manner as he ended up spending some time in prison, but definitely a larger-than-life figure up on Capitol Hill.
He certainly was, and I can remember many times eating at Morton's Restaurant and in Georgetown and seeing the little corner where his table was, known as Rosti's Rotunda. And there the chairman of the Ways and Means Committee would hold court over thick steaks and strong drinks. He was a larger-than-life figure who came out of Chicago, served in the Korean War, never went to college, a product of Mayor Daley's machine. Some thought he was headed to be Speaker of the House, but his career took a new turn to be chairman of the powerful tax-writing committee. I'm in a minority at Human Events in the sense I never saw the criminality in him cashing in stamps for petty cash. This was a rule that changed while he was in Congress. He did not change, and he claimed he was unaware of it. Well, we know ignorance of the law is no excuse, even for a lawmaker, and he paid the price, defeat and jail time. But in the end, he had a bit of a resurgence as a talking head on television. Dan Rostenkowski was, as you say, a larger-than-life figure.
John, two very long-time serving members of Capitol Hill being lost this week. Thanks very much for your time, as always.
Always a pleasure. And as I get back to another, I think will be a shorter serving figure in Washington, Robert Gibbs, I'm John Gizzi.
John Gizzi, political editor at Human Events, the National Conservative Weekly. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, reporting for WorldNet Daily.